I just hold it for that. Dear Barb, you asked Grandpa and I to do a tape of our lives, so we'll try to remember what went on way back when. This is what I remember. Some was told to me by my parents. My dad, Frank Padola, was born in Prague, Austria, on the June 16th, 1855. He came over to this country with his parents when he was 4 years old. He went to school as far as the third grade, so he never learned to speak English properly, as his parents were Bohemian and spoke it constantly to their children. He never became a citizen of the United States until he was in his 60s and was living with my sister Clara in Manitowoc. She wanted to get some money for him, so she had to get his citizenship papers in order to get this money. And my mother's name was Emma Sikora, and she was Bohemian too, but had a better education than Dad. She was born in 1870 on June 24th, which is Phyllis's, my daughter-in-law's birthday too. She was 15 years younger than my father, and he was married when he was 35.
How do you spell Sikora?
Okay, I'll let
yes.
You got it off now, Dad?
No, no,
do you want me to keep?
It doesn't matter, Grandma.
I believe they were married in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, and made their home there until Dad developed rheumatism from the dampness from Lake Michigan. So the doctor advised them to move to a drier climate. They had 5 children born while living there, plus twins, a boy and a girl who died at birth. Sister Clara was the oldest, then Brother Edward, we called him Ole, then Charles, then Myrtle, and Irvin. They were all born in Manitowoc. Dad was a blacksmith by trade, and he belonged to the Manitowoc City Fire Department. And in my collection of old pictures, you will find a picture of the fire department crew with their fancy uniforms on, and also a family picture of Dad and Mother with the 5 children. I always thought it was a shame they had to leave Manitowoc, because as the boys grew up and had to leave school to find jobs, they would have had a better chance, better opportunities, made more money, and perhaps could have even stayed in school longer. There was a big shipyard in Manitowoc, and an aluminum factory, and many, many other industries. It's a lovely city. When I was a junior in high school, I decided to work in Manitowoc, and I did housework to earn enough money to buy myself some clothes for my last year in high school. So got to meet some of my mother's relatives, some aunts, uncles, cousins, and I thought then what a wonderful city it would have been to have grown up in. I earned enough at $6 a week to buy myself a winter coat, a dress, 2 midi blouses, a white one, and a navy blue one, and a skirt. I was keeping house for Dad, Fritz, and Brother Charles, also Brother Irvin, till he got married. No one ever had any money for me, though. Well, my folks moved to Cadott, Wisconsin. I think my dad chose the location because he had 2 brothers that lived on farms in that area. Dad and a friend, Mr. Malata, went into business together. They put up a big building. Dad did the horseshoeing, and his partner, Mr. Malata, built wagons and did repair work. There's a picture of the shop in my collection of pictures that you will find. We children had to go right past the shop on our way to school, and we often would stop on our way home to watch Dad shoe horses. Dad wore a leather apron when he worked. I can still smell the odor from the horses' hooves when Dad would put the hot shoes on to fit them. Then he would take them over to the anvil and pound and shape them to fit. We also loved to see the forge and hear the bellows roar. It was exciting, and I was so proud. I was so proud of him, I guess is what I down here. All his children learned the poem The Village Blacksmith, which of course we thought was written just for him. I still remember most of it. All we children recited it to him, and I'm sure if we had asked him, he could have recited it too, in his broken English. Well, I was the firstborn after we moved to Gdansk, then Brother Fritz, and then Arlene. That made 8 children in all. It sure kept my mother busy. She had to wash clothes by hand, and because we had no running water in the house, the boys would carry all our water from a spring located a block from our house. Our home had no electricity, no phone, no bathroom, just an outside toilet. Cars were just being invented. I can remember the first one. It was open and looked like a buggy. It had big round wheels, oh, real big wheels. And it chugged along making noise and scaring the horses, and me too. Aeroplanes hadn't been invented yet, nor radios, nor TVs. And the first radio I remember was when I was in high school. We'd come from school and stop at the shop that had one, and the owner would let us listen, and we'd marvel at where the music was coming from. When Bert and I got married, we had a little radio with earphones, and if we both wanted to listen, we'd separate the phones and each take one, and then Bert listened to the first Dempsey Tooney fight that way. Well, my dad finally got water and a sink put in our kitchen, and we thought it was so wonderful, but still had to have our Saturday night baths in the tub on the kitchen floor. No inside bathroom. In the summer, Yellow River was close to our home, and Mother would take us 3 children down to the river for our Saturday night baths. We loved it. We had a huge garden, and my older brothers took care of it and raised enough vegetables to last us all winter. We had a cow and chickens, so that helped keep us in milk, butter, eggs, and meat. In the fall, they would butcher a pig, and Mother would make the best sausage called Ethernitsa and preserve the meat in jars. When I was 13 in 1917, Mother's gallbladder started acting up, and the doctor said she would have to have it out. The nearest hospital was in Chippewa Falls, 12 miles away. So on the day she left, and the last time I seen her, she gave me a hug and said, "Take care of things until I get back. You are a good girl, Mildred." I was the oldest girl at home, and the other sisters had married and moved away. It was during the First World War, and my brother Charles was in the army and in France fighting. Brother Irvin was in the service too, but Brother Edward had married Bert's sister Viola. Well, after Mother left that day, I just knew I would never see her again, and I laid on my bed and cried my heart out. Well, that was it. She died, and nothing was ever the same. She died in November 1917, and I was in the 7th grade. I finished school that year and kept house for Dad and my brothers. Washed clothes by hand, took over for Mother, cooking, cleaning, and all the things that she did. As soon as Mother died, Dad didn't seem to want to work anymore, and so he sold his share of the shop to Mr. Malata. He never worked again. That spring, my sister Clara, who lived in North Dakota, wanted Dad and us children to come and live with her. Well, Dad decided to go, so we stayed 3 whole years, because I graduated from the 8th grade there in the town of Pisac, North Dakota, and then went 2 years there to high school. Then Dad decided to go back to Kanab and wanted me to keep house again. And so we went back, and I finished my last 2 years in the Kadab High School and kept house like before for my dad and my brothers. And then I graduated in May 1923. I was the first to graduate in our family of 8. Bert and I went together for 2 years, in my junior and senior year. He took up barbering, and the barber gave him $3 a week. And after I graduated, he got a job barbering in Osseo. We were married in June and left, keep on reading, and left Brother Fritz and Dad to Batchett. Duane was born the next year, 1924. In 1925, we moved to Chalet as we had bought a barbershop. The Depression hit and we were barely making it financially. I started fixing hair and decided to go to beauty school so I could have my own shop. I got my license, opened my shop, and with me working and Dad working, we could borrow the money from the bank to buy this building that we are now in. Duane graduated in 1943 and enlisted in the Navy. Bert closed our barbershop and took a job for a year on the Elkhorn Highway in Alaska. I worked alone in my beauty shop. Bert saved his money and I saved mine, and when he got home, we were able to pay off our loan on the building. It was then that we were able to save our money and things looked up for us. Well, Barb and Dave, I've done my best in trying to bring you up to date on our lives. We are now in our 80s and in our golden years. It's 1989. We lost our son in 1987. It's like it was after losing my mother in 1917. Nothing is the same. We have three wonderful grandchildren, David, Colleen, and Julie, and eight great-grandchildren whom we love. God has been good to us. Other than losing Duane, we have our help and have lived 66 years together. God bless you all.
You didn't walk. Can you say just a little bit about
can I say a little bit about
it? I wondered if you could say just a little bit about what it was like when your father passed away.
He was living with Clara. He had a stroke, David. And he and Fritz, he and Fritz lived together. You know, after I got married, see, they were batching it. And then after I got married, then they lived together about 10 years. And then he got this stroke, and then Clara came and insisted that he go live with her. So she took care of him, and that's where he passed away.
Was that in Manitowoc?
In Manitowoc, yeah. They had sold the farm in North Dakota and moved to Manitowoc. Mm-hmm. And he worked in the shipyards then, Abel did.
Did he work while you were in South Dakota? You said you were there 3 years.
Yes, he helped Abel on the farm.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, well, he was out there with you.
Well, he was with me, yeah. Dad was with me all the time. And, I was... I must have been 15, 16 years old when I lived there. They only offered two years of high school there in Pisac. So if I hadn't gone back to Pagada, I would never finish school. Finish the 4 years.
Do you remember anything about your grandparents? Or were they?
I never knew. Never knew my grandparents. They were gone. They died real young.
All four of them.
All four.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew them.
Mm-hmm. Well, your dad's folks are still over in the old country.
Yeah, that's right. My dad's folks, but my mother's had passed away, you know. So.
Oh, so when your dad was here in the United States, his parents were in Bohemia. Austria.
No, he came over with his parents, David.
Oh,
when he was 4 years old.
Oh, I see. Oh.
Yeah, he came over with them.
But then they died before he was married.
Oh, my, yes. Yeah. They were... Well, they must have moved to Manitowoc. That's where Dad always lived, it seemed like, you know. Yeah.
How do you suppose they got from... They more than likely came to New York, or came... His parents came to this country from at some point. How did they get from wherever they landed to Manitowoc?
Did they have some relatives in Manitowoc that he settled there?
I never heard them sing.
I just wondered why Wisconsin and why Manitowoc?
Yeah, I know.
You know?
I don't know, David.
You don't know if they landed in New York and came through the customs there?
Customs there.
No, I never talked to Dad about that. I wish I had.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, I mentioned once that he didn't talk very plain, And he did talk so different. We children used to poke fun of him, because he talked so funny. Like, for instance, he never said word. He always said the Burke.
The Burke.
And Dwayne was always Rainy. Rain. See, Dwayne, Rain. That's how
Dwayne was. Did he have a Polish accent? Or was he hard of hearing and didn't...
Yes,
didn't,
he was hard of hearing.
Well, if he was hard of hearing, maybe he didn't speak well.
That's right. That's right. And he came to visit us at Shot Lake one time when Bert was trout fishing. I'll never forget.
I took him trout fishing. They sat in the car while I went fishing.
Got dark.
Late in the evening.
And it got dark, and I think Dad was anxious to get going and get home. And he says, my goodness, he said, the Bert sure likes the fish.
So how, what year did your father die?
He died when he was 86. That's all I can tell you the year right
but
now.
You and Grandpa were already married then.
Oh my, yes. That's amazing. My mother was only 47 when she died.
But your dad was
15 years older than mother.
I remember yesterday we were talking and Grandpa, you mentioned that you do remember just faintly, you said, your grandmother.
Yeah, my grandma. I just faintly remember them.
She was smoking something or other.
A clay pipe.
Yeah.
She'd sneak off in it because it was a terrible sin back then for women to smoke. Hmm. She smoked this little, I can see that little white clay pipe.
Wow. Now, would she have been your mother's?
No, my dad's mother.
Your dad's mother.
My mother's folks, I knew them real well. Because I went, when I was about 16 years old, I went out to North Dakota and worked for them all summer on the farm.
What town was that in?
I was at Hope, North Dakota. Yeah. I worked for them all summer. I come back in the fall and went to start the school again, second year of high school.
So you remember your grandparents then?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of amazing.
Yeah, on my mother's side.
On your mother's side.
Yeah.
And your father's mother, you remember her.
Just faintly, yeah.
But your father's father, you don't remember.
Well, just very faintly I remember. Yeah, I know I couldn't have been over 5 years old. No, I doubt that I was 5, because we lived in St. Paul. How long, I don't remember. Must have been a year at least. And we went to Hope, and then from Hope we went to Pace, and that's where I started in the first grade. So I must have been about 7 then, maybe.
Where do you think your grandparents are buried? Two of them would be in North Dakota.
No, they're buried up in northern Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Miller side of the family. They're buried up in, way up in northern Minnesota. Cohasset, I think, is the name of the town. Why they went up there, I'll never know.
Had they lived there?
Not that I know of. No.
How about your dad's folks?
They're buried in Osseo.
In Osseo?
Yeah. Yeah, see, on Dad's side of the family, all came from Osceola. And Mother's side of the family, I really didn't know them until I was a lot older. I don't know where they were living.
But they were farmers.
Well, I guess so. Yeah, I guess they were. He went out there to farm, anyway, out to North Dakota.
See, that's seems like that's all we knew in those days was fun.
Yeah.
Well, then you from the time that you could remember, you lived in, you told me yesterday when we were talking, you lived in St. Paul, and then in
Hope, North Dakota,
and in Hope,
and Page, and Niagara,
in Niagara, North Dakota.
Yeah, then from there we came back to Cadott, Wisconsin, and he bought a little 40-acre farm. In a log house and a log barn on it.
How far was
that? Was probably, about 1911 or 12. Because I'm pretty sure I went to school in Cadott for 1 year before we moved out on the farm. And I went from that, whatever grade it was, from that to eighth grade out there in that little Red Country School. And we lived in this damn log house. Yeah, the coldest thing that...
Didn't you say you used to go and start the fires at school?
Well, yeah. I think I got 50 cents a week.
Okay.
I'd start... We lived about a quarter of a mile from the school. And I'd go up there and start the fires every morning. Back to the schoolhouse, they had a great big woodshed full of nice dry maple wood.
I'm trying to put together that you lived out on the farm from Cadott.
Yeah.
And Graham lived in town at that time.
Yeah.
That's where Dad
and we lived in this log house, I don't know, one or two years, because Gordon in 1914 was born in this log house. Well, shortly after that, then we built a house up close to the road. We lived in that. That's where Viola was married.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were just about 13 years old then,
that's
weren't
right.
you?
Yeah.
And,
You were about 17 then.
Yeah.
Because you're almost 4 years older than I am.
Well, no, if you were 13, I was 4 years old. Yeah, I was about 17. Mm-hmm. Then we moved over on this other farm. 80-acre farm.
Farther?
But Dad was never a farmer. All he wanted to do was monkey around with horses and be in town where the saloons were.
What do you remember about your, you know, if you had to say just a couple things about your mom, you know, what sticks out in your mind about her? I mean,
nothing. She was just a hard-working woman. Just... Yeah.
Very frail.
Oh, yeah, she didn't weigh over 110 pounds. Skinnier than a rail. But a hard worker, as poor as we were, we always had something to eat. We'd go to town maybe once a week with the horses, you know, or maybe one horse. But the first thing Dad would do would be park behind a saloon, and he'd have a pail. Little goddamn pail about that high, and couldn't get that filled with beer. Go buy a ring of baloney, car. I think it cost a dime then. And we'd sit out there in that buggy, and I would sip on beer a little bit. He never was a farmer. Dad had some good jobs, but he just wouldn't hang on to them.
Which one of your parents went first?
Oh, my mother died when she was what?
40.
Just 40 years old. Yeah. She, they said she had TB, but they had her in a sanitarium there in Eau Claire. And I'll just bet dollars to donuts that she had cancer, because they didn't know what cancer was back then. What year was it she died?
She died in 23, just a few days after she married.
Yeah, we were married on the 23rd of June, or 27th of June, and she died the third day of July.
How long has she been in the sanitarium?
Oh, God, for near a year. Every time we'd go to see her, you could see that she was getting worse all the time.
What's Can you remember when the first time was that you saw each other?
You know, back when Lila got married, when she was 13 years old.
Hmm.
I knew her from then until we got married.
You knew my mother.
Yeah.
I think you remember my mother better
yes.
than I do.
Oh, gosh, yes. Your dad. I knew all of that.
Was my mother real short?
Yeah, she's short and chunky.
Oh, I'd take after.
Well, she would after having 7 or 8 kids.
Yeah.
Well, 2 died, so that made 9, didn't it?
That made 10, David, because 8 are living.
8
were
are
living.
Living.
Were living, and then she lost the twins.
Lost the twins.
So when Graham was 13 and Gramp, you were 17, is when you first remember seeing each other.
Yeah.
Hadn't you seen each other before then? Because you kind of lived.
Well, not that I can recall.
Paying attention, you know.
I was so damn bashful.
He was bashful. Do you know where the day Viola and Ole got married? You know. Where Bert was, they had a, you must have had an upstairs
we had
now.
A stairway. Right?
And I can remember walking by that stairway and looking up at you, you know, and you would come down and join the rest of us. So shy.
At that time, I didn't know what girls were made for.
I remember your teacher.
I know. I thought they were around just to keep out.
And then, well, it was then 6 years later before you were actually married.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Quite a while.
Well, we knew each other at least 6 years.
It was after I came back from Manitowoc. Or, no, not Manitowoc, from North Dakota.
Yeah.
Well, my junior year.
When I started learning the barber trade there from Doppy Sherman, I stayed with Viola. She lived just across the alley from them.
In Kanat.
Yeah, and we were going together then.
Yeah. That's really why you took up barbering, because you didn't have a job.
No, I didn't
and
have
you said,
no.
You said to me one time, when we were together, you said, I think I'm going to take up barbering. And,
What had you done between the time that you had stopped going to school and the time you started taking up barbering?
Well, the first year, I went out to Reed Burns, and I went out to Castle, North Dakota. We didn't have a dime in our pocket. Just enough, we had enough fare. See, we'd gone to Minneapolis, that's how it started. We went to an employment agency, and the wall was covered, you know, with people wanting. And we saw this one, help wanted on a farm off of Castle, North Dakota, so we had enough money to buy. I wouldn't write freight trains, no way.
Why was that?
Well, one of our neighbor kids that I chummed with when we lived out in the country there, a little Schweitzer family, his dad worked the hell out of that kid, and he just couldn't stand it anymore, and so he was going to run away. And he got to Chippewa Falls and was going to hop a train, and it was going a little too fast. And he hung on to the boxcar, you know, and he swung out and hit one of those brake signals, and it threw him under the train and cut his head off. Guys, so that scared me ever riding. So Reed and I went out there to North Dakota, and we didn't have any names or anything. We got off the train at the depot there, and a guy come over and said, are you guys looking for work? And we said, yes. Well, he said, I got a spot for both of you. So I worked on his farm, and Reed Burns worked on his brother's farm, about a mile from where I was.
And you were about 15 years old when
about 15, 16 long in there. I stayed there all summer. I got $75 a month, for God's sakes, in board and room. That was good money.
But the work was hard.
Well, I was used to farming. Of course, everything was horses, you know, and I remember I had 6 horses I had to take care of. Those were mine. And I had to take care of them. I did everything from from early spring to late fall until we got through threshing. Yeah, we had a good time.
And then you went back to Kadat?
Then I went back to Kadat, and then that fall, of course, I ran out of money in a hurry, didn't have much money, so I went up and got a job in the woods. And I think I stayed there about 10 days. That was the worst thing I ever saw.
Where was that here?
Well, that was out of Owens. We went on the lumber company had a little narrow gauge railroad to run way back up in the woods. And we had to sleep in the darndest bunkhouse, just some straw and some boards and some blankets over here. You know, never saw a camp in the daylight. We were out before the sun up in the morning, and it was dark when we come in. Mm-hmm. All I did, I was trimming trees. I remember that. I had to keep an axe sharp to trim those great big pine trees that we were cutting.
After they were down?
Yeah. Just, of course, it was all hand-sawed, you know, cross-cut saw. Horses dragging them out of the woods. Then they'd load them on this little railroad. So one day I packed my little suitcase that I had, and I got on that old logging train and come home.
Well, you still must have been like 17 years old. Or
yeah,
I
was long in there.
And that's pretty much...
Shortly after that, well, when did World War I start? That was in...
1914.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. You see, when I was 18... That was in September 2nd. Just a few days after my birthday, Dad and I had to go in and register because I was 18 and he was 45. I was just over the limit and he was just a year under the limit, I guess. And we registered, and then it was quite a long time, and then I was called. I was called for my physical, and I was sick in bed with the flu. I think we had a phone on the farm. We had to call in, tell them I just couldn't make it down to Chippewa Falls. And I don't know just what day that was that I was called for a physical. It must have been right close to the 1st of November, because November 11th, the war was over. So I missed getting in the Army just by a couple weeks.
They probably had more people than they wanted, you know. When
yeah,
it
was just because I was the right age. A lot of times I'd wished that I had got in, you know, if it was only for a week or 2 weeks. I wonder what it would have been for me in World War I and Dwayne in World War II. I just missed it. And then I decided to... Well, I was talking with that Dr. Sherman and got out there one day and told him I'd like to learn the barber trade. And he said, well, you can come in here with me and I'll teach it to you. He said, I'll give you $3 a week. And I gave my sister $2 a week of that for board and room.
Violet.
Yeah. So I had a whole dollar every week to spend.
I bet you just can't imagine.
No.
No.
You just cannot imagine. There never was any money, was there, Bert?
No.
There never any money.
And you didn't worry.
No.
I didn't worry about
Nobody
it.
Nobody had anything.
You could go to a dance for 50 cents. Dance tickets for 50 cents then. Remember that one time we went up to that Pavilion, where was it, up to Owens or Stanley or someplace, when we took that old hard rubber-tired truck, whole bunch of us.
Oh.
I had to sneak into the dance hall. I didn't have a dime in my pocket.
We had a picnic that day, didn't we?
Yeah, we had a picnic.
We got
a picture of it something.
Yeah.
Well, we did. Some of the guys that could afford it, they went in and bought tickets, and when they come out, they had a little piece of green ribbon like that pinned on their lapel. So there was nothing. I can't remember who it was with me. He couldn't get in either. So we went and cuddled a piece of leaf, the same length. We pinned that on and got, we went in and danced all night long.
That's the darndest thing.
What's that?
That
we were just as happy then without money.
Listen to me. That was our first date. That's the first time we went together. You took me on that picnic.
Uh-huh.
And there were all older people. And I remember Doris, my friend, wanted to know how in the world I got invited to that picnic. You know, she and Eddie May didn't, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
because
you
had asked me. And,
yeah.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have been there either. And I think my brother Charles was there then.
Yeah,
too.
He was there, too.
Well, then you were married and
right after she got graduated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many class reunions have you been back to?
Everyone we had, David.
Everyone,
it was 25, 35, and 50.
Yeah, it could not. They don't have them.
They don't have many.
They don't have.
No.
If there was never anything in the papers down there about it. No publicity like they do here.
No. Right. Yeah. There were 15 in our class, in my class.
At your last reunion,
There were 12 of us. Pretty
12.
Darn good. 50 years.
Yeah.
Now there's quite a few gone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this friend of mine, this Doris, you know, you heard me speak of her. She lived in Madison. I think she just imagined she was in love with Cully all those years. Don't you remember?
Well, I don't know, knowing her the way I did.
Yeah. And they finally lost their mates, both of them. And he's living in California, and they finally got together, and they got married.
Oh, you told me every reunion that he
they
was
were
back
always
to.
There.
Oh, Christ, they were sneaking out together,
yeah.
Smooching back in the corner like a couple teenagers.
Oh, dear. I think she thought when she got married, you know, that it was going to be just like when she was a teenager.
Well, this Cully's wife was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
How did you happen to after you're married, spot Shelley? I mean, what?
Oh, tell me.
I was working there in Osceola, you know, and at that time, these barber supply houses were, this one especially, was putting out a little kind of a catalog in a magazine, and I saw this ad, barbershop for sale. It's a man that just died. And there was a guy, his name was Leo Cardinal, and he had just got out of barber school. And he was looking for a job, and I was talking to him about it. He had a car. So he says, let's go up and take a look at it. So, well, that was a day's drive for up here then. So we come up and there's Liz X owned that little shop and took a look at it and I liked it, you know, and I asked about price, no money of course, and then I asked her about trying it for a few weeks. So she said, yeah, and so gosh, we hit it off good right away. It was a three-chair shop.
Yeah,
and
excuse me, but didn't you work with this Cardinal?
Well, Leo stayed with me for one or 2 weeks.
Here in Shelley?
Yeah, uh-huh. And then when I decided that I'd like to own the shop, I'd always heard so darn much, you know, about partnerships. And so I told Leo, I says, I'd like to have the shop, but I says, I don't believe in going in partnership with anybody. I said, if I can take it alone, I'll take it. Well, he got mad, of course, and so he left me here, and so I've been here ever since.
And when you were trying it out, Graham was still down in Osseo?
She was in Osseo, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, and I had no way of getting back and forth, you know, so she got I found a house that I could rent, and I let her know, yeah, and she got a hold of a truck some way, what little furniture we had,
Irv and Gladys brought me up there.
They brought you after after the furniture got here, didn't
yeah.
they?
Yeah.
Yeah, this little house right side of the beauty shop there. That
That's
what old Bill Gore owned it at that time. So.
And your dad was just a little over a year old.
Yeah.
And I said he had a nice personality from the time he was a baby.
Yeah.
He would stand in that screen door and say hi to everybody that would go by, and they'd stop, and then of course they'd visit with me, and I got acquainted that way with people.
Mm-hmm. What sticks in your mind the first time you saw Shell Lake? I mean, is it? You remember the lake or the
you want to tell first?
Oh, I don't know. I just loved it. It was wild country. And it was there. I was getting sick of Osseo anyway. And I knew I couldn't work for $12 a week the rest of my life. I just had to take a chance.
Yeah.
But I made some kind of arrangements with her to pay so much a month, you know. We had the two banks here at that time. Frank Chops had a shop, and then this Earl Kellier had a shop down in the hotel, but he was in Rochester having a goiter operation. And when he come back out and was ready to go to work, why, he didn't want to open a shop, so I hired him. He was with me, what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
That's when I learned fly fishing, because he was such a experts, you know.
Now, my ideal of Shell Lake, I didn't like the looks of it. You know why? There weren't any trees around the lake. They had all been cut down, Grant, the great big trees. They were just little rushy stuff. And I thought, well, what a lonely-looking lake. You know, no trees. And I really didn't like it, the looks of it.
Well, back then, the fishing was good in here. We were getting walleyes anywhere from 5 to 10 and 12 pounds. But they're all gone now, those big ones.
Were there more people here then?
No, less than there is now.
Less than the... It's always been about 1,000 or a little
less. Yeah, all from anywhere from 900 to 1,200. But I don't know, I hit it off with the gang right away. And,
you mean like with Nick and...
No, not Nick.
That was years that we had no bowling alley or anything then. All we did was hunt and fish. Because then, when this Earl Kellier and I, we fished all the time. And then that was 1925. Then in 1927, I was pretty well situated here then, and I... they were after me to join the Masonic Lodge. That's when I joined in 1927. Then I got in, Scoop and I and Bert were real good friends then, because he was postmaster across here. And
Bert was?
Or
Scoop was?
Scoop was, yeah. And I got invited into their deer camp.
Maybe you should check that out.
Okay.
Now you're recording.
We're recording again.
Yeah.
It seemed like yesterday we got to the point where where'd we get to?
Well, we just started about deer hunting.
Oh, you told me that you were one of the original five.
Yeah. Well, they were six. Bill Todd was with us part of the time then. He was working out.
It was you and Scoop and Bill Todd and Scoop's dad.
No. Bert Stoper.
Bert Stoper.
There was Bert and Scoop.
They were brothers.
Yeah, and Harney Benson and Cleve Benson. And Frank Consulman and Bill Todd and myself to start out with. And I'm the only one left out of the original gang.
I'm trying to think of who... It seemed like one of the first years when I stayed overnight in the tar paper shack.
Yeah.
There was an old man there.
Yeah, that was Pungy's
dad?
Father-in-law. Yeah.
Okay.
Ornery old devil.
I remember him. I remember the old shack.
The old tar paper shack.
Well, when did McNabb and Bennett and some of those guys,
they didn't come in until years later. See, after McNabb married Shirley, well, then he got into our camp. And then, Pungy was with us in the old tar paper shack, too. He was invited in then. And then Ole Plottum, years later, was invited in.
And then?
And I've outlived all of them.
Yeah.
Even Ray Bennett.
Even the, and it was just kind of a standing rule that I guess that if they paid their share, that the, like, Dwayne could hunt there and I could hunt there.
Yeah.
And Jim Plottum could hunt there.
Yeah.
And guys like
that. But they were charged so much a day.
Yeah. What was the first year you were, you hunted up there on at the Stouffer camp? You said,
well, gee, that was in, maybe around 1930, along in there.
They bought the land?
The Stouffer's dad owned that 120 acres, and he turned it over to Burton Scoop.
Was the shack there?
The old tar paper shack, that's where he lived. This first guy that owned it.
Right, too.
Yeah.
Let's kind of switch for a minute and probably hard to put into words what it was like living in the, we're kind of like up to the early 30s and before World War II, but I know it was the Depression and times were hard. Anything you can remember that, you know, really sticks in your mind about working through and living through the Depression here in Shell Lake?
Oh, well,
in the early 30s?
It was tough. It was really tough. I'd work all week long working alone, and at the end of the week I'd probably have anywhere from $17 to $20 that I'd taken in all week. Staying open every evening, Saturday nights till 10 o'clock. But we were, sometime during the Depression, we had haircuts down to 25 cents and shaves 10 cents.
Hmm. And still worked all those hours.
Yeah. Anything to get it. And we paid rent on the building. I think it was only about $5 or $10 a month.
Now this
and then
was
we
the,
had to rent a house.
This was the time that you were in several buildings on Main Street.
Well, I was alone, you know, in that old building for a long time. And then when it got so bad that Frank was in this building, Frank Chop. So we talked one day and we decided to go together and we could split the rent here.
Hmm.
And we were together all 3 or 4 years at least.
In the 30s there somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere along in there. The Depression was still on.
Hmm.
And that's when one-eyed road started to shop over across the street. We were back up to 40 cents then on haircuts. And this old Rhodes opened up his shop and put a big sign in the window, 35 cents. And so I went and saw Frank about it. He says, we've got our steady customers. They won't leave us. But they were doing it. So I told Frank, I said, I'm going to drop below him. So I dropped him to 30 cents. Then he dropped them to 25 across the street. And I put a big sign in the window, haircuts free. And I worked for near a week. But all the guys would drop a quarter or a half a dollar in them. I had a little box there. And so finally, at the end of the week, old Rhodes closed his shop, moved out of town.
Kind of like a haircut war.
Yeah, it was a haircut war, yeah. I did haircuts and shaves And you'd be surprised who would come in and walk out, not leave a dime.
Hmm.
People that had money.
Yeah. Huh. Take you up on the haircuts free.
Yeah.
Well, you were renting a house during that time, and,
yeah.
and you were able to have a car all the time.
No.
You didn't?
No, we didn't have a car.
During the Depression,
No. No. We didn't have a car. We didn't have any way of getting around.
Hmm. How would you keep in touch with, your sister and,
Well, they would come up and see us.
They'd come up.
Yeah. And then it was during that time when Dwayne got so sick, with that stomach trouble. And Doc Herring said, you've got to get him to Eau Claire quick. He says, there's something real bad. And so he loaned me his car. So I took him right down to Eau Claire, and Mrs. Herring went with us. Because they had to operate immediately. He had to have obstruction, and they didn't think he was going to live.
He was how old then?
Graham, how old was he?
I think I remember him being like 8 years old.
Yeah, something like that. Between 8 and 10 years old, yeah. Yeah, that was a bad deal.
Did you stay right down there with him?
Mill did. But I had to come back and run the darn shop. Try to make a dollar or two.
So it sounds like, from what you're saying, is that you felt the Depression as much as anybody.
Oh.
Things were going pretty well.
Yeah, that's why it's never rubbed off of me to this day. I learned the value of a dollar. And they can call me tight if they want to. I don't care. When I spend a dollar, I want a dollar's value out of it.
You'd mentioned that things were going pretty well in the 20s and in their early...
Oh, yes, up until that, until our banks closed. Then things went to pot.
Hmm. Both banks closed.
Yeah, first the lumberman's closed, and then, in a few months, the other one.
Did you lose money when they closed?
No, I didn't have a dime. Heck, I didn't have any money to put in the bank.
I see. But people did.
Oh, there's a lot of people lost quite a bit.
Never recovered from that.
Yeah.
Well, things must have started to look up then later in the 30s and then on to the 40s.
Yeah, I see. Then when Frank and I dissolved partnerships, I moved. No, Frank, we were in here. And Frank went down to that little building, by the drugstore. And he was in there for I don't know how long. And then he thought he was pulling a fast one on me. He offered Harry Wilson more rent than what I was paying. And I didn't know what was going on. And it was Harry Wilson come to me and told me he had to raise the rent. And I told him I couldn't afford it. So then Frank rented me out of the place. So then I went down where he was. Well, then I was in there, I don't know how long, a year or so. And we were getting on our feet a little then. And so, unbeknownst to Frank, Graham had the beauty shop then too, which was helping. And we had a little money, and I bought the building out from under Frank without him knowing.
From Harry Wilson?
Yeah, from Harry Wilson.
Did Harry necessarily have the building for sale? Or did you just
not really.
Not really. You
not really.
Told him you wanted to buy it?
Yeah. Yeah, we only paid $2,000 for it, But, I worked...
Where did you ever get the money to buy the building?
Well, we didn't. We borrowed.
Huh.
Well, we had... I guess we had $500 saved up. And we paid $500 down, and that left 15 plus interest. And
did you borrow that from friends or
no,
the bank?
No, from the bank. Through Rudy and Doc Herring.
Mm-hmm.
guitar box. Then the that Elkhorn job came up.
How did you ever hear about that?
Well, everybody, it was all over. They would have employment offices like over to Rice Lake. You could go over there, and if there's any job that you thought you could do, why, they'd hire you. So Ed Nelson and I went over there, and they didn't have many jobs. Well, they had two jobs that were open. I could have gone to Valdez and as a carpenter, worked on building docks. And so I told the guy over there I'd take that, and he said, "Gosh, that's too tough work for you." He says, "At Whitehorse, we got an opening for some bull cooks." Well, I said, "Oh, I'll take that." I didn't even ask him what it was. I didn't know what a bull cook was. So,
what year would that have been, approximately, when you...
Well, the war was on, and it was 40, what, 3?
40, when the war started in late 41.
Yeah, this was about 43, I think. Because Duane was overseas then. They paid our way right from Minneapolis right up there to the job. You know?
Train, all by train.
Yeah, we went from Minneapolis to Winnipeg, Winnipeg to Prince Rupert, and
we're going to stop this just a minute.
Okay.
I had a question I was going to ask, and I got to... How long were you in the Yukon?
About 7 months.
Yeah. But it was good money.
Oh, big money, yeah. And then I made so much money on the side, too, cutting hair, and I was getting dollar haircut up there.
Huh.
And I half sold shoes. I didn't have nothing to do.
Yeah.
See,
what did a bull cook turn out to be?
Well, we had like Army barracks, you know, CC barracks that they moved up there. And I had that about, maybe 30 guys that slept in there. I had to sweep it once a day. That was my job.
Had nothing to do with cooking?
No, nothing. No, I swept that once a day, and then I was cutting hair, and I was even half-soling shoes.
Huh.
And then,
Was it a salary? Was it a monthly salary?
Yeah, we got paid every 2 weeks.
Oh.
Every time I'd get my check, I'd go right, mail it right to Graham.
Huh.
And it was used a dime of it. And then, Christ, I had a money belt on me when I come home. It was full. I must have had $1,500 in Canadian money on my belt. The guys on that ship, when we come back, see, we took a boat from Prince Rupert.
Oh, that's right. On the way up, you said you went to Winnipeg by train, and then on up.
And then to Prince Rupert, and then from there, we went by boat on the inside passage to Skagway.
Was there a road or a railway up there?
No. Well, at Skagway, there was a railroad from there into Whitehorse, up over the mountains.
Yeah, that must have been some sights.
A narrow gauge railroad, and you look out the car window, and you'd see boxcars down there 800-900 feet laying in the valleys, you know. And back then, it was all steam engine. And we'd have the engine and two coaches. That's all they could pull up the grade was so steep.
Jeez.
And a couple of times, there was some grades we couldn't make. We'd have to back down, take another run at it.
Ever hear about trains toppling off?
Well, never a passenger train. No. There was boxcars and things that would go off. I've got pictures of some of that old railroad. It was supposed to have been one of the seven wonders of the world, you know, at one time, building that road. And you could look off over on the mountain across this big valley, and you could still see the old trail from back in the gold days when the gold rush was on. Thousands and thousands of men walked up over that mountain.
Must have been, you must have had thoughts about that when the recent oil spill took place there. And
oh, yeah, it's all dead. Yeah, I thought of that right away.
What a shame that that happened.
Yeah, see, when I was there, the railroad was run by the Army. The American Army took it over. And in Yukon Territory was dry. You know, you couldn't buy, you could buy a bottle, one bottle of whiskey once a month.
Hmm.
And, well, I'd always go down to the mine. It was always $6-7. And I'd take it back to camp and I'd get 40 for it.
Hmm.
So the guys were just, you know, they were loaded with money and they want something to drink. Then I got acquainted with some of the kids on the railroad, and they would sneak it through the customs up on top, you know, when they come into Yukon Territory. I'd give them sometimes 10, 15, well, as high as $20 for a bottle. Then I'd turn around and sell it for 40.
This job as a bull cook, the men that were in these camps were building the Yukon Highway. That
yeah,
building
yeah,
a roadway.
Our place was the head office. I always said we had three crews working, one coming, one going, and one working. Guys would come up there with, they were guaranteed their way up and their way back. They'd stay two or three days and want to go back.
Hmm. They just didn't like it.
No. And, some of them, I think they come up there just for the ride. The best, they always had up there, the best workers they had on the whole Algon Highway were from Wisconsin and Minnesota. We had a bunch of Okies that come in there. They'd come up one day and the minute there was a boat ready to go back, they'd go back.
What made you come back after 7 months? Did you think about staying on?
This Elliot that I worked for, the contractor, his contract was, he fulfilled his contract.
I see.
So everybody could go home.
Could people have stayed and worked on
some other contract?
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah, the boat we come back on was a great big one. I think there was about 600 or 700 guys on that. And when we got to back down to Prince Rupert, there was guys got us right away. They wanted to hire us for a job down there at Prince Rupert.
Doing what?
Well, just whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we all wanted to go home.
Yeah. Were you up there during the wintertime?
No. No. Went up there early in the spring, and it was... I got home just a day before deer season. I got here. Because the next morning I was up to deer camp.
I'll be down.
On the last part of November.
Huh. Well, then shortly after that, of course, the war came to an end.
And, yeah.
And Dad came home and you said he worked for a little while. And
he picked up odd jobs around here. He was never satisfied. You know, there was no future in anything, and they wanted to go back to Seattle. They were living up here in a little apartment. And then, all on his own, he started out first, I guess, bus driving out there in Seattle. And then he decided all on his own that he went to barber school. Of course, the government paid for everything, you know.
You and him had really never had, you know, a conversation about that you'd like him to be a barber?
No. And after he finished the school, we called him quite often. He said, I said, why don't you come back and work with me now? Of course, you get out of a barber school, you don't know anything anyway. So I practically had to train him here, you know. He was with me then for over 40 years.
He served as an apprenticeship?
Yeah, I served as an apprenticeship. When he went for his examination, he passed it the first time.
Oh, he had to take one here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
It's funny how things work out sometimes.
Yeah, it just worked out that way. Of course, even when he worked for me, the government paid him so much, and I paid him so much.
I mean, during his apprenticeship?
Yeah. And then after he got his Master Barber license, by then I put him on a commission, straight commission. And I let him do most of the work. And after he got so he could shave a guy and cut hair decent.
Well, you worked together then, right, from the time that he started?
Yeah, that was in the 40s.
Yeah, up through mid-60s when you retired.
Yeah. Yeah, when I retired in 63, I just walked out and gave him the key. Left everything.
He worked alone from 65 to 87.
Yeah.
Well, that phone seems to stop us here.